Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 429 of the Roguecast, recorded August 22nd, 2023, Asgardian Nepo Baby. Welcome back to the Roguecast. We're all tired.
Yeah, I was like...
Running theme!
Yeah. I mean, I know we often are, but, you know, I think part of it is when we record this, we're in a warm room often.
Yep.
The AC doesn't seem to be doing a great job today. But
also, we're all tired.
I was a little bit sick yesterday, just like a little stomach bug. I feel better today, so that's good. Nick, how are you? How's your health?
I'm fine.
Nick just stays up late watching movies.
I got a full 8 hours sleep last night. I'm not tired.
That's because that's literally all his day. He just watches the movies, then it's bedtime.
Yep.
I played some video games for like the first time in like years.
It has been a while. It hasn't been a while.
We'll talk about video games a little bit later, yeah.
Oh, you're a bunch of video game nerds.
Playing video games, yeah.
You're the video game nerd.
We are the last few weeks.
We are merely video game dabblers.
It's true.
I'm a video game dabbler by most standards.
That is true.
But you play more games than we do.
I guess, but not in the last month.
Not in the last couple of days.
But Nick, we're just all of the many things you watch, I know we're going to do a little roundup at the end. We're going to like do a quick round sort of thing through that, and... I don't know. I'm going to catch people up. Y'all had talked about my adventures with Superman.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to chime in on that now that I've seen some, and then we have an interesting week of comics with a few kind of cool surprises.
Yep. First of all, about games that have come in this week. We got a few different like Kickstarter and direct from manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
We got a game called Queen by Midnight, which is from Darrington Press, the people who do all the Critical Role games.
Yep.
This one I don't think is in a Critical Role world, although I don't know those worlds that well. This is it's a deck builder where you're competing princesses trying to become the Queen by Midnight.
And the Queen by Midnight is... Do we know what it is?
I don't know. You're the Queen.
Okay. Queen by Midnight sounded like it was like a title.
No.
Not, like, literally, but there's some sort of deadline.
There's a clock tower. There's an actual 3D clock tower you build.
I remember a
timer on it.
Looking at the box, and the production values are gorgeous.
It's a beautiful game, yes.
I also like deck building games. I just flat out... It's pretty rare for me to play one and not like it.
Yep.
They might be a little deeper than I like on some cases. I kind of like the more casual ones, but I've also... Well, I guess those are like living card games when you're talking about Marvel Champions.
Right.
But anyway, it looked cool, though.
We also got Perfect Wave, which is a game from USAopoly, the guys who do everything from Tapple to all the various Monopoly games, specialty Monopoly games, but also... what else did you? Telstrations.
Yep. Right. Yeah, I feel like they have their finger on a lot of notable sort of pulses.
D&D Trivia, that's them.
Mm-hmm.
But this is they're starting to do some, like, games. This is like a board game where you're trying to surf the perfect wave.
That actually sounds kind of ridiculous and fun.
It looks fun. It looks like a sort of lightweight, pretty easy to understand game. And then on the other end of things, we got Sagrada Artisans, which is the legacy version of Sagrada, the stained glass window building game.
Yep.
Which the Sagrada originally uses dice.
Yeah.
It's like a dice drafting mechanic to build these little colorful windows. This is a coloring book mechanic. You have a coloring book that you use and stickers and that kind of thing.
That's fun. I don't know how many people have played legacy games, but I know that they're starting to... You know, we're a decent number of people have played them.
I mean, they've been around for like a decade now, right?
It's true, but I think it's still not something, if you're a casual gamer, that may not cross your path. But they're so fascinating. The idea of a one-time playthrough, but where you'll probably play, I would generally guess most of these kind of games, somewhere between 10 and 20 times.
Well, Sagrada Artisans specifically is a 10-session game, but also, we do have one pack of like what they call the recharge pack.
Yeah.
So basically you can buy that, and it like lets you do the recharge and go through it. It says more extra stickers and
that's fun.
Books and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
But yeah, they like... You got to try at least one legacy game to see if it suits you, because it's such a cool thing to sort of play a game where each game informs the next one, and there's changes and twists, and you open little packs that alter, you know, the parameters of the game or give you new powers. There's nothing else like it, and you just need to try at least one of them. Maybe Sagrada's the one. I don't know.
Sagrada's a great game. I've always loved it, and I like legacy games, so I was pretty excited about this. I've not tried it yet, but it is definitely high on my list of things to check out. We got the Cinematic Adventures for Total Recall and Highlander. It goes with the Everyday Heroes 5th Edition type game.
Yep. You know what made me excited, Randy, yesterday? When I made that dumb comment, and then I was like, oh, this could work. Because we had the two sort of, you know, there's the Everyday Heroes core book.
Yep.
And then they've got these slightly lesser-known licenses, but that are still cool licenses, like the Crow and stuff.
Yep.
And now they've got Total Recall, and what was the other one?
Highlander,
yeah. And I was, like, joking and be like, oh, it'd be funny if, you know, like, you had, like, a Highlander running around on Mars, and I was like, those guys are immortal. They could absolutely be running around on Mars. And I was like, this could actually be kind
of
cool.
Wasn't the regular cut of Highlander 2 on Mars or some weird thing?
I don't watch Highlander movies.
No. Highlander 2 was, in fact, some kind of alien world or something.
Yeah, it was.
That's bizarre. Some kind
of science fiction thing.
Yeah. Is that, like, not revealed until the end? Like, No, it's pretty early on.
It actually
is on. It's on Earth.
God, that was only by the...
Is it?
There is an alien thing related to it somehow. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's been so long since I've watched it.
So they got that crazy even in just by the second movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second movie's pretty nuts.
I watched the first movie about 10 years ago, which I believe is about 30 years late to watch it, because you ideally want to watch that one when you're between, I'm going to say, like 12 and 18.
If you think guys fighting with swords in the parking lot under a wrestling arena is cool, you're the right age for it.
All right, now look. I still think that's pretty cool.
And Sean Connery is a Spanish...
Sean Connery is the most Scottish Spaniard ever.
Yes.
Yep. But, like, it is a fun movie. It is absolutely of its era. And it's an example of where I think, like, being dated can be to your advantage. Sometimes being really selling the era that it was filmed in is an awesome thing. Plus, music by Queen.
It does figure Christopher Lambert as the lead, which there was a day when Christopher Lambert could lead a movie, and that was that day.
That was that day. and then it's got one of the great villains, Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown.
The Kurgan.
The Kurgan, yeah. If you would like to try, I mean, like, both, like, I actually think there's fun stuff to be done in either of those settings on its own, and having flipped through The Crow and seen how they built out the mythology in that source book, where you could have different sort of spirit animals that would give you different powers and abilities, and also tie into different psychological states of your anti-hero, I was like, okay, they've thought this out, so they probably have some very cool stuff that you can be doing, on Mars, or Earth, or whatever, in Total Recall. And I'm sure they have lots of Highlander ideas.
Yeah.
But if you want the Kurgan trying to working along with Cohagen on Mars, you can do it.
Cohagen, give these people air.
I will give them the blade.
We also got After Us, which is a new game from Pandasaurus, which is a it's not a deck build, it's a card game about the animals left after humans are wiped out.
That sounds both grim and kind of cool.
Yeah.
Do you know, is it like a kind of darker game?
I don't know.
Or is, I mean, sometimes you get like a premise like that, but it's just the tone of the game isn't dark. But that sounds neat. I like it.
We got in Marvel Champions, it's been a while since they've done an expansion for it.
Yep.
And then Next Evolution, which is their X-Force.
Featuring Cable and Domino.
Cable and Domino, yeah.
We couldn't keep that in stock.
Don't remember who the villains are. Yeah,
Strife.
Strife, is it Strife?
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of them. I think the Marauders, but Strife is like the main one.
Mm-hmm. So you need to put down a separate deck of cards that will handle only his chandelier helmet.
Yes.
Once you get past its defenses, then you can finally fight Strife.
That's how you fight Strife. You got to take your chandelier helmet off. We got Race of the Raft, which is the co-op Isle of Cats.
Right.
And we got Barcelona, which is a fairly detailed resource management game.
Okay.
Wild Tile West, which is a tile building game, and it's from the people who did the publisher of the Dune Imperium game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Great title. Wild Tiled West is a great title.
We also got the Cyberpunk Danger Gal Dossier, which I guess Danger Gal is kind of one of their, like, mercenaries in the cyberpunk world.
Okay.
And this is, like, adventures and that kind of thing.
Okay, that sounds fun.
And we got the minis for Bigby and the Giants. The new pre-painted ones.
Oh, right. They're talking about the randomized sets of D&D minis. Yep. Do you know, is that one of those ones where everyone has, like, a big mini and then, like, a few small minis?
Yeah, you get a giant mini and then several smaller ones.
Those are cool.
Yep. And, when we should have, just so people know, a big mini restock coming in a couple of days here.
Right.
Yep.
This being our WizKids minis, the unpainted ones.
Yes.
This may be pretty large to the point of you may see anguish on our faces.
Yes.
But it will also make for a very cool section.
It's true.
But if we look anguished, pat us on the head and give us a Round Rock donut and we'll be better.
Which is a good idea for everyone. All right, let's talk about comics for August 23rd. And let's start with, well, that was my favorite comic of the week, Marvel Unleashed.
It was, I have to admit, this was way better than I thought it would be.
We had to force Dave to read it.
Yep.
Right, well, so this is one of those Marvel pet stories, just as you sometimes get DC super pet stories. And, like, so we've got, just real quick, Pizza Dog from Hawkeye.
Pizza Dog.
There's
Shuri the Flurkin.
Right, Red Wing from Falcon. Lockjaw is in it.
Yep.
You will eventually, it gets around to Throg, the yep. Thor frog.
And it looks like Bats, the ghost dog from Doctor Strange, yep. who Dave loves.
Yeah, well, I'll probably like him better in this.
But it features a new one,
animal. Which is like a deep cut.
His name is D-Dog.
Which, by the way, for many of the Marvel fan, that may mean nothing nope. in particular. But... as Randy knows, because he is a fan of Z-list character D-Man.
Didn't actually think it was going to be related to
and
D-Man.
And it is.
I will also say that D-Man was in the first comic I ever bought with my own money.
That's wild. Diamond Dunphy? Is that what he went by?
Dennis Dunphy.
But was Diamond in the mix when he, like, as his fighter name?
No, oh, okay.
Demolition Man.
Demolition.
Yeah, right. D-Man is Demolition Man. And he was a guy who was, like, a super-powered wrestler. Sometimes in the comics, he's presented as a homeless guy or someone who has, like, kind of some mental problems. He's a good character, though. And if you read those old Cap stories by Mark Gruenwald, he's actually used well in it. But he's also a little bit of a joke at Marvel. Anyway, we see, kind of in his tradition, a stray dog, a.k.a. kind of a homeless dog.
Yep.
And so where you got me to read this, Randy, where I would not have read it otherwise, is there's lots of these pet books that are just kind of, they're fun larks where it's kind of like, you know that Super Pets movie that they did?
Yeah.
It kind of looks like that.
Yep.
And like, in other words, it's kind of very cartoony in all ages. This one was a little more serious. It's almost like they are just almost the normal animals, but we see them talk, but they're not like kind of super goofy. There is humor in it. It's actually very funny, yep. I think, at times.
Yep. But it's akin to something like Stray Dogs. Like what,
right. There are this sort of breakout, like, indie, or it was Image Comics. Image Comics hit about from, like, a couple of years back, where some dogs found out their owner might be a serial killer.
Or a less dire version of, like, Beast of Burden.
Right. It's not as grim as either of those, but it's got, like, slightly higher stakes. But one of the funny things is, in a kind of interesting move, because this is not set in any particular modern time, they go to Avengers Mansion, back when they had a mansion and Jarvis ran it, and the animals kind of, like, run through the door, and they start explaining what's going on
by barking.
To Jarvis.
They're explaining.
But first they show it what the dogs say, and it's all like, her owner's been kidnapped, we think they might have ties to AIM, blah, blah, blah. And then they kind of cut to Jarvis and what he sees, and it's just like...
And it's great, because he's like, good heavens. And then Red Wing shows up and shrieks. He's like, oh, lovely, Master Red Wing is joining in. And then we see that Red Wing is basically... It's like when heroes go to the Avengers for help, but they go to the pet Avengers for help.
Right, and Red Wing is very kind of stuck up and very much like, I'm the elite.
Did you know that Carol Danvers' cat had a middle name? Because it's
not.
Pretty great. Chewbacca, Sassy Danvers.
That makes sense.
This was like, every page had some new or cool thing on it. The art's really good.
The art is great.
It's slightly realistic, actually.
Did we mention that it's Kyle Starks who...
Yeah, who's been doing Peacemaker, which we love.
Oh, right,
also,
right. I don't have his name, like, locked on yet.
Isn't he the guy who's also doing I Hate This Place or Fuck This Place? Which
Yes. Yeah, I Hate This Place is also his. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. This was really good.
We actually had him down for Staple. Y'all have met him.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, you met him.
I'm not Staple.
He was in our store.
Okay. I just thought you meant because you bring in some people for Staple that don't come by the store sometimes.
No, he came by the store.
Okay.
You all have met him.
All right. Sorry, he didn't make a better impression. Kyle, work on your personality.
But this is a great first issue.
Yeah, really
it has a lot to it. It's not just a one-off joke.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I appreciated that.
Yeah, it opens
with a really cool Lockjaw sequence that I thought was amazing.
I think we can sort of say because it's the opening sequence.
I don't want to spoil everything
it's a cool hook, though. It's like, it's just the first page. It's right there. Lockjaw is being hunted by Kraven the Hunter.
Yes.
It's a cool idea.
It is.
And this is a kind of a hard sell, so I think knowing just a little bit more is
okay.
All right. Immortal Thor. Al Ewing, who made a name for himself on Immortal Hulk,
yep.
is doing an Immortal Thor book. And it reminds me of Immortal Hulk in the same way it is sort of like taking the existing character and just like putting a spin on it, but also being very true to the character itself.
Right? It has no special ties to Immortal Hulk.
Nope.
It seems like that may just be the sort of almost the branding for Al Ewing's
thematic
notable takeover. But Thor is like literally immortal in it, and it's kind of showing what, you know, he is the Allfather now. I ended up really liking this. I was sort of surprised. It seemed a little dense at first, the writing, and I was like, oh, this is kind of overwritten.
Yeah.
But then, like, all the stuff I was reading was, I was like, oh, that's a neat idea. Oh, that's cool. He talked about, like, visiting his father in Valhalla and getting advice from him, and his father's, like, trying to say, he's like, you know, don't be so dour and serious, you know, and...
it kind of does everything you want from a Thor book.
It has a lot of stuff I want, but it also surprised me, too.
Yeah.
It begins with, like, kind of a Frost Giant incursion, which is a pretty cool thing, and sort of the way Thor has to deal with it is kind of unique, arguably a little bit funny. and then, like, Loki turns up, so you get some Loki stuff.
Yep.
You know, it's small things, but I like, you know, Loki is in, I guess I would say, a non-binary state, it seems like, in this.
Yep.
And Thor just completely face value accepts it. Loki's problem is always that Loki is Loki, and certainly not anything to do with gender.
No.
And but Loki, this is an interesting thing where Loki has some something seemingly very valuable to offer, which is pretty cool. I liked, you know, Sif shows up. And then he...
Wait, is it Sif?
She's the guardian of the Rainbow Bridge.
Oh, right. Because they refer to the Warriors 4, and I thought Sif was going to be, and it's like, no, it's Brunhilde the Valkyrie.
Yeah. Actually, is it her? I thought it was a different name.
They called her Brunhild.
Yeah, they called her Brunhild.
Is it? Definitely?
That's the original Valkyrie.
Yes, I noticed that, and it actually, whenever I would see something I didn't know the full story on, it made me just kind of want to read it more. I was like, oh, that's cool. I like the Warriors 4 as an idea.
Yeah, he calls her Hildegard. You're right. It is not Brunhilde the Viking. It is another.
Oh my God, I know who that is.
Oh.
From Walt Simonson's run, there was a little girl named Hilda.
Oh, wow.
Hildegard.
Yeah.
Who's the daughter of Volstagg, I think.
Oh, so now she's in the...
He had a whole bunch of kids.
Yeah, you're right. And now she's probably
four. He had a big family, so that actually makes complete sense.
I gotta say, this was on page, like, 3.
Yeah.
They had the Warriors 4 show up, and immediately I'm like, they wasted the Warriors 3 in the MCU.
The movies,
three different times. And so just seeing them being kind of cool and seeing the true Volstagg... I was like, that won me over pretty quickly.
Yep.
I'm sad that Heimdall is no more, but I like that Sif is the new Heimdall.
I don't know how that exactly came about, but Heimdall died in the movies, right?
He did.
Hela killed him or something?
Yeah.
And I suspect Thanos were doing a little bit of lining up with that. But also, this delves into some deeper issues about, you know, the nature of immortals and things like that. And, you know, I would never assume that Heimdall is out.
If I remember correctly, though, Sif is Heimdall's sister.
Man, everybody's related. Once you start getting into mythology, it's all related.
But I'm almost, like, 100% certain that is the case.
Sure. So you're saying that she got their job, she's a Nepo baby?
Yes.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
Asgardian Nepo baby?
Yes.
I actually love the sequence at the Rainbow Bridge, and then Thor comes to Earth, and like, just as an example of kind of the deep dive stuff that's in this, Thor is talking about how, like, he sometimes feels like years will pass between when he's able to visit Earth, and that sometimes humans grow old and die in that time, and he kind of misses it because he is immortal, or effectively immortal. And he starts, he drops a few names of people he's wondering, you know, who he's still thinking of, who people who've died over the years. And, like, one of the people he names drops is the original Captain Marvel, Mar-Vell. Now, that is a character who, when I was a kid, was the story when he died. So, like, 40 years ago. And that is a deep cut. But Thor, like, mentioned that and a bunch of other names, and I was like, I want to look up these other names. I don't know all the other people he mentioned, but I'm like, I kind of want to, because it's clear that Ewing has done his homework on this. And there's a new threat, but really it's the kind of the writing and the fact that Thor kind of has an easygoing vibe in this. Like, it's got action and stuff like that, but it is not quite like, to me, and this is a good thing, it wasn't like all hardcore Viking badassery.
Right.
I needed a little bit of lightness.
Yeah,
there's a scene that has Thor playing chess in the park, in like Central Park.
That was pretty cool.
And that's kind of shows a different side of Thor that we don't often see.
It's what would be, like in a movie, this would be a montage sequence where, he's kind of reconnecting with sort of humans. And they even mention something like the Asgardians know that he splits his time between Earth and Asgard, but that it's not kind of considered some taboo thing, that it's like everybody knows, you know, Thor kind of, his heart belongs to two worlds, and so they roll with it.
And then Ewing doesn't waste much time in introducing his, I guess, overall threat for the...
Yep. Pretty heavy-duty threat. Yeah, pretty heavy-duty threat.
Yep.
And then, like, really well-drawn at the end.
But it feels Thor.
Yeah.
Like, at its core, it feels like something Thor would deal with.
Yeah.
And,
It has a lot of lore in it, a lot of Thor lore.
Yes.
In this, not stuff you need to know, but if you kind of, like... It's the specific Thor of Marvel Comics, and it's a deep dive. There's some new ideas. I'll be curious to see. You know, like sometimes when you bring in a big villain, they all will always be compared to like Walt Simonson's Surtur.
Yeah,
because he spent like 6 months building up to it and showing him forging the sword in the cosmos over the course of like 6 issues. Yeah. That would become like the end of the world sword. And so it's kind of hard to live up to that epicness, but like I feel like he's got a pretty good villain going on here.
I will also say that I feel the spirit of Simonson's Thor in this. The bones are there.
Yeah, there's a really good afterword from him where he talks about how he came to be interested in Marvel's Thor after not being so much originally.
Right.
And it roughly compares to my own reading and growing up.
Because Al Ewing is British, correct?
He is. I didn't know that until I read this afterward, honestly. Simonson, for all that he's remembered for, like, you know, creating Beta Ray Bill and the famous issue where they storm hell and, the executioner holds off the hordes of hell.
Yep.
Big, epic, serious things. There was tons of humor throughout the book. Lots and lots of humor. Everything from, like, you know, when he had a human guise, Sigurd Jarlsson.
Yep.
And he would, there were some Superman jokes in there of him going undercover, putting on the glasses.
Yeah.
I remember some punk rockers telling Thor that he should get a mohawk too, and him joking, he's like, how would my hat stay on my head or whatever? And, like, there was, like, lots of fun stuff. And I'm not saying this is, like, a goofy book or anything like that, but there's these little moments of lightness that, that do, yeah, like you say, Nick, I think they reflect the Simonson era.
Along with the
lore thing that Simonson was into. Because, you know, it's interesting, you can have sort of like, some people I think want to have more allegiance to the original myths, and I kind of get that. Some people are like, I want to tie this into the Marvel lore. Like, you know, Simonson did a lot of, like, he would bring in more stuff from old mythology, but he also had Thor, like, he got his disguise and stuff like that and his identity from Nick Fury.
Right.
And this vibes with that. This is Marvel Universe Thor.
Yeah.
So
it was a really good first issue.
Yep.
It really was. A couple of Fall of X books this week. There is Realm of X, which sees the New Mutants plus a few others, Marrow and a couple other characters, Typhoid Mary, Sand, Dust.
Dust.
All wind up in Vanaheim, a.k.a. Asgard. New Mutants going to Asgard was one of those big things in the 80s, so it's kind of cool to see them return to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jean Grey, number one. So Jean Grey has a solo series, miniseries?
It's a miniseries.
It's like 4 or 5 issues, I think.
And it looks like her... This is dealing with, like, her going back in time, sort of trying to choose different outcomes of things. And this one deals with the time-displaced X-Men that Brian Michael Bendis did years ago.
But yeah, I guess it's, like, it's kind of key points in her life.
Yeah, as she's dying, she's trying to figure out ways of how things could have been different, essentially, after the Hellfire Gala. Spoilers.
That sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's written by Innocente,
Back in the Day fame.
Yeah, Back in the Day fame.
What was she most famous for, Randy? X-Factor?
Or Daredevil.
Daredevil.
And Daredevil, yeah. But she's had her hands in X-Men books. Wait, did you say Innocente?
No, it's Louise Simonson.
Or Louise Simonson.
Yeah, I was like, I think it's somebody else.
It's Louise Simonson. Yeah, sorry.
Louise Simonson is known for X-Factor.
Yes.
And then we've got The Schlub, a new Image book from Ryan Stegman and Kenny Porter that is about a sort of divorced dentist, kind of a goober, who becomes Superman-level powerful.
This is, you know, Image is a pretty good place for showcasing kind of goofy concepts like that and stuff that, you know, this could be a Netflix movie in a year or two.
Yeah.
But this is kind of ground floor stuff version of it.
And then for me, there was Penguin number one was this week,
right? Tom King has a following. I'm trying to think. What are his big ones?
No one in this room is in it, but...
Right. But his big ones at DC are...
Batman, Heroes in Crisis.
Supergirl.
Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle is one of the biggest ones, I think.
He did the Adam Strange one.
Yep. Even before, and his very first one was, what, Omega Men?
Mega Men.
Kind of... This is a... I don't know if this is a per se a follow-up to his Batman run. It definitely, I think, ties into some of the stuff that Chip Zdarsky did. But long story short, it follows the Penguin as he has kind of staged his death, is trying to retire. They're kind of playing him as an older Penguin in this. Like, he's let his hair kind of go grayish-white or silver. Mm. And he has, like, moved to Metropolis, and he's just trying to, like, kind of live a quiet life. But, you know, people keep pushing at him. And it's got the sort of usual Tom King kind of ambition and stuff like that. If you like what it is that Tom King does, give it a shot.
There's a new Star Trek Strange New Worlds second miniseries for them.
Yep. I don't know what the premise of this one is, but Strange New Worlds is it's just a good that's an awesome batch of characters to choose from.
Yep.
So I would look forward to maybe checking in on this and seeing some of the characters. Maybe get some more screen time. Maybe Ortegas will get her a moment in this.
There's also the second issue of the Contest of Chaos.
Yep,
Third issue. It's a Fantastic Four annual. It is Ghost Rider versus Human Torch.
Yep.
Yeah, each, you know, this is Agatha Harkness causing Marvel heroes to fight each other for various kind of evil mystical reasons.
Yep.
And this time you get two flamey heroes. Yeah, Ghost Rider and Human Torch, who, like, Human Torch is even like, we shouldn't be fighting. We're both fire guys and stuff like that. There's some fun banter between them. They are fighting alternately, like on like a Ghost Rider Hell train. They're sometimes in Hell and other places. And there is like a bigger picture story too. The kind of fun part I think for me was Johnny Storm is kind of a normal guy in a lot of ways, and Ghost Rider is a relentless demon of Hell, and like. Johnny is the one trying to kind of figure things out and just like, hey, let's talk, bro, or whatever.
So is this the fight of Johnny's?
What's that?
Is this Johnny Blaze?
Johnny Storm and Johnny Blaze.
Yeah, yeah. It's oh, yeah, you're right. It's double Johnny. Yeah. It is part three. You can read these in isolation, but if you happen to be reading the various Marvel annuals from Contest of Chaos, you can get the bigger picture.
Right. TMNT Stranger Things number 2 is this week, and Starfinder number 2, and Big Game number 2.
And you liked that second issue of Ninja Turtles Stranger Things, right?
It was a lot of fun.
And I also had the third issue of Christopher Chaos, which I'm still really, really enjoying. And I think that was all that
I think that's everything, yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about a couple of trailers, and then about some video games and TV and movies. All right, we've definitely noticed that there's been a bit of a downturn in, like, trailers and news, with there being a multi-level strike with writers and actors on strike for who knows how much longer.
Yep.
But there were a couple trailers.
I think we wanted to just quick point out, go strikers, give them their money.
Yep, give them the money, pay them.
Yeah. You know, yes, we'd like to have more stuff coming out, but not at the expense of people getting a living wage.
Pay them and maybe put a kibosh or limitations on AI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
It's a minor thing, but I think it can be misleading. Although you might occasionally see a George Clooney lending their name and weight to these, this is really about the people who are not George Clooney, which are like tens of thousands of actors.
75% of the people in the guild who are making less than $26,000 a year.
Right. They are struggling to get by, and Hollywood is like, well, could you maybe shut up and just be an AI and starve to death?
Yeah. Just be glad you're on the screen. That's all that you're...
Yeah. So anyway, go strike. But yes, what are we talking about?
So let's talk about the Scott Pilgrim anime.
Okay.
There's a teaser for it's Netflix's animated version of it. Looks very much like the Brian Lee O'Malley comics.
Right. This is like such a teaser that there's no scenes quite per se.
There's barely any dialogue.
It is just a visual style trailer with some of that kind of, what do they call that music? The music that's the Like 16-bit music.
8-bit.
Yeah, chip tunes, okay. Stuff like that, yeah.
This is actually just like, but this is music. Like, this is a song.
Yeah. I don't know, it's like one of their indie songs.
Is it? I don't know. Yeah. It felt like it had, like, the little sound effects and stuff in it, but maybe that was just the movie.
That was just the movie.
Okay. Well, we do hear anyway. Alison Pill screaming, "We are sex bomb." Yep.
But here's the thing. There's two lines in there. We get Knives Chow saying, "Wow." Both of those are from the movie. And so they've got the entire voice cast, and I'm like, did they re-record, or are they just basically redoing the movie as a cartoon?
My hope is that they're doing the actual comic.
Right.
My
hope is too. For people who don't know, the original graphic novel series, what, 5 volumes long?
Six volumes long.
And not only was there stuff that didn't make it into the movie, it actually wasn't even done when the movie came out. So this was one of those things like Akira and other stuff like that where they just found their own story. And I think we'd all say we like, to varying stripes, the Scott Pilgrim movie.
I very much like the movie.
I liked it better than the comic.
Oh, interesting. And I like the movie, but like the comic better.
I just thought it was a better ending in the movie than it was in the comic.
Man, it's been a while since I've finished reading the comic, so I can't actually recall it.
My thing was the better stuff with Knives in the movie.
Yeah.
The comic was a little just kind of like...
Yeah, Knives got short shrift, and her dad's not even in it.
Yeah.
It's definitely but I don't
know.
We don't know
exactly what this is.
Yep. But the teaser looks fun.
Right, like they like the animation looks like a really good translation of his comic art style.
Yeah.
And, you know, very kinetic, fun, kinda tongue in cheek looking. You see little glimpses of the fights and stuff like that. With like the 7 Evil X's.
Yep.
And but yeah, it would be weird if they got all the voice cast together and all that, and all they did was the movie with the novelty of it being, you know, drawn.
Well,
like
that's what I'm saying. What if they didn't actually get the voice cast together? What if they're just basically using the audio track from the movie and animating over it?
I mean, it's an interesting novelty, but I wouldn't watch it then.
I wouldn't either, and I don't know if that's what they're doing. They have not come out and said that they're recording new dialogue.
I feel like it's such a big thing if they were, like, where they'd be, like, you know, the full story from the comics, you know, lots of, you know, subplots you never knew about. Like, I feel like they'd be hyping that up.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be, like, the movie just animated. But I could be wrong,
so.
We'll see.
Yeah, yeah, well, it's at least, you know, neat looking.
Yeah. Y'all heard of this fella, Zack Snyder?
He doesn't seem to come up in comic circles at all.
No.
But, I believe he's the guy who made Dawn of the Dead and Sucker Punch. And I don't know anything else he made, ever.
That's good. That's good. That's what you should stick with. And actually, you shouldn't watch Sucker Punch either. So.
But you should watch Army of the Dead. So, just in this conversation, I will be the Zack Snyder in his corner.
You're the fanboy.
Yep. And Dave and I are the, let's hold him down and beat him.
Yeah, I'm a Zack Snyder hater.
Yep.
I will, you know, I have to give props to the Snyder Man for his very first movie, Dawn of the Dead remake. Yep.
Although, again, I feel like we can give a lot of that credit to screenwriter James Gunn.
I think so, too, but I think it's actually very well directed, too.
Okay.
To be honest. I think my read of it is that he had not picked up too many of his, like, bad habits yet.
Yep.
And he was doing he was being more, like, workmanlike. He was translating it, but he wasn't, like... I'm going to really lean into this. And even then, he still has a lot of shots of slow-motion shells falling from guns firing in slow-mo.
Yeah.
I still like Watchmen to some degree. It's a weird beast, but I kind of like it.
Yep.
And I think that's it for me.
Yeah.
Nick, did you like the Justice League Snyder Cut?
To a degree, yeah.
All right, that's big fan stuff. and then you liked his other zombie movie, which was not like an actual sequel to his remake.
No.
Just its own thing. It's a Vegas heist and soldiers and Dave Bautista and people firing in slow motion, I'm going to guess.
There's some slow motion, but... the man has his tics. I mean, he is not unlike Michael Bay or...
Yeah, that's a fair comparison.
Somehow worse.
I don't think he's worse than Michael Bay.
I do. I can watch Armageddon all day long. I cannot watch a Zack Snyder movie that isn't.
But you haven't watched any like current Michael Bay.
That's true. He may have gotten worse.
Michael Bay has kind of like
it's the worst so far.
Michael Bay has gone more Michael Bay than he's.
Okay,
so let's say what we're talking about.
We're talking about Rebel Moon.
The trailer just hit.
Right, Rebel Moon, which people, I think these people kind of know this, but they might not. It was originally a pitch to do an actual Star Wars movie.
Yep.
The deal fell through. I don't remember if it was like the man at Disney trying to constrain the creative genius of him.
Yeah.
Or if he was just like, you know what, I can make more money doing this as my own thing.
No, it was definitely Disney told him we're not doing this, because I think he then had...
They're like, we can't have dongs on the screen or something.
He had a chip on his shoulder, and then he went to Netflix, and he's doing this big two-part thing called Rebel Moon.
Yep.
It's his Star Wars, and they finally dropped the trailer for it.
Yep.
And it looks like you'd expect.
That is true. Big budget.
Yep. Very big budget.
Lots of slow motion shots of gunfire.
Huge cast.
Yep. There's a... He can... It does seem like he's got the clout to kind of get pretty decent casting these days.
Yep.
And I guess I should say he's always had pretty solid casting on his movies.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, they're forced to deliver his dialogue.
Yes!
No. I don't know. There was a lot of... You know how if you, like, took just the opening of Lord of the Rings where Cate Blanchett as Galadriel is like, it is a time of great change and sadness in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, if you kind of just took those parts, that's kind of the narration of this.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a legend is foretold and...
But, I mean, it's not unlike Star Wars. I mean, it literally is a fascist dictating regime, and then there's a rebel force that has a potential savior amongst them to destroy.
Isn't there is there a mention of like a prophecy in
there's
this?
There's a girl. She's a princess.
Yeah.
Which I think ends up being Sophia Boutella.
I don't know who that is.
She was in Atomic Blonde. She's been in a bunch of, like, she was in Kingsman. She had the little razors for feet.
Oh, her, okay.
Who all, I saw Anthony Hopkins. I know Charlie Hunnam is in this.
Jenna Malone, Jimin Hunsu, Ed Skrein. A lot of, like, character actors, but...
Yeah.
Corey Stoll, Cary Elwes.
Corey
Stoll did have a scene-defining turn this year as MODOK, so...
Oh, the MODOK guy's going to be in it.
The MODOK guy's in it.
So here's the thing that struck me about the trailer, whose like story and scenes weren't exactly jumping out, is that big budget looking. They have lightsabers that are like lightsabers, but kind of more used more fast and ninja style.
There's a drider
in it. It seems like it's also halfway between like sort of like an almost fantasy kingdom on some planet or maybe multiple planets.
Yeah.
And then there's very clearly sci-fi stuff, spaceships flying, you know, pew-pewing lasers and some big ships and things. But, you know, Star Wars also had vibes of feudalism and stuff like that, like, I don't know, Queen Amidala's palace and all that stuff. But this one, like, looked like it was made to look more like it was, like, medieval-ish at times.
I think this had been made in, like, 1993,
yep.
when there was not a lot of Star Wars around.
Yep.
This has been great.
It would have been the time.
Right now, there's good Star Wars to watch, so why would I see Zack Snyder's
Ahsoka's
version?
Just about to hit. All right, Nick, take it away. Defend it.
I mean,
change Nick's mind.
It feels like pointless to try to defend something in a room with two people who are just outright haters.
It's also indefensible. No, let's not be people. I know that there's like people listening to this who like the Snyder Cut and some of his other movies. Everybody, you know, a lot of people like 300.
I am not a big Zack Snyder fan. I've watched most of his movies because there's just something I can't look away from them.
Uh-huh. I do press play.
However, I hate his nihilism. Yeah. And I hate kind of like the darkness taking over everything. And like, I don't even want... I mean, Superman should not have that in it at all.
Yeah, he's a bit grimdark.
This one, weirdly, did not feel grimdark. It felt just very... sci-fi fantasy,
Star Warsy,
big budget, cool special effects. As you said, there is like a buckbeak looking creature.
Yeah,
that,
there's definitely
bounds
some
about,
kind of space griffin.
Which space griffin is cool. I thought
Peter Griffin.
If it was somebody riding a Peter Griffin griffin. No, but I think the drider looked cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all very kind of like. Music video looking, very pop, very surface area trailer. I mean, here's this cool stuff.
Right. To give him some due, I wouldn't, the first trailer doesn't, even for a movie that ended up being good, which this won't, the first trailer doesn't always showcase much of it. It's not meant to show depth. It's meant to give you like a bit of an eyeball kick.
It is only 3 minutes and 45 seconds to tell your story.
Right. So. They don't have a lot of time. Right. You got to show Driders.
Right. You got to show your Drider in slow motion. That's going to take up a full 30 seconds.
Maybe this is his version of maybe his Dune. Who knows?
Yes, I think this is his version of his Dune.
What if Paul fired round after round into the bad guys, shells clinking to the floor, laser shells, I mean.
Anyway, if you're one of the people for whom this is for, there's a trailer for it.
You know it's going to be big for Netflix, and especially in kind of a drought right now.
And all I ask is that you don't talk to me about it.
Yep.
I'm probably going to talk to you about it.
When you come in and say, hey, have you guys seen it yet? We will look to the floor
awkwardly.
Guys,
just come to me. I'll talk to you about it. It's fine.
The answer is going to be no. The answer is going to be no, I didn't watch it.
Yeah, I you know, Randy, my initial concern watching this is that there'd be a few scenes where I was like, oh, man, that's pretty cool looking. You know, I remember watching the trailer for Sucker Punch once upon a time, and I was like, that's pretty cool looking.
The trailer for Sucker Punch is a good trailer. This is not so much anymore.
Not so much, yeah. I was actually pleased with this trailer because I was like, oh, I can write that off.
This is like those Facebook Dave Ferriby Mark Safe from having to watch Rebel Moon.
Yes, that's exactly right. But if you're interested in it, more power to you. Nick will talk to you.
Yes, but only
me. And it'll probably make some money too, and we'll be set.
Yeah. For years from now, when Rebel Moon 3 and 4 are starting up, you and I can just stare at each other and ruefully shake our heads.
Yep. It'll be like the actor strike is in its third year, but Zack Snyder, his empire is control strong. Zack Snyder's Netflix, which will be what Netflix will be at the time.
The all AI Rebel Moon 4 is dark future.
And finally, get the Sucker Punch series that he always wanted. All right.
Yes. All right, so let's roll over and talk about our topics. I just got a PS5.
Okay.
To play...
You lucky bastard.
Play Spider-Man 2, because it's the only way you can play Spider-Man 2. That's what finally got me.
Spider-Man 2 is out? Not out?
No, it comes out later in the month. Or in September.
But
I also was like, oh, I want to play Baldur's Gate 3, and that's going to be on there. And I've been wanting to play this game, Stray Gods, which is probably doesn't really use the processing power of the PS.
Right. But it is like a kind of indie game that's taken hold lately and kind of caught people's attention.
Yep. Well, it is a musical RPG, and I like musicals.
Right. That I cannot say I've ever seen even one that is like that.
So this is the basic concept of this, and it is a very indie game. It's got the sort of cel-shaded, like a little slow-motion moving. It's like... That's not like full motion. It's not. It's basically a little bit more like watching more like a motion comic.
Yeah, yeah.
In these ways.
I've seen any number of like indie games that that use that for some of their storytelling portions.
It feels a bit like the kind of thing that Kieran Gillen would make, especially his Wicked and Divine style. But basically, Stray Gods takes place in the modern world where what they call the idols, the remaining gods, live amongst us, sort of hidden, very fables-esque, and. The lead character is a singer in a band. They're like not very successful. They're doing auditions, and Calliope the Muse comes to her audition, and like it seems like she's going to take her under her wing. And then Calliope is murdered, and her soul goes into this character, and she becomes the last muse.
Okay.
And immediately, all the remaining gods, led by Athena, it's Athena, a sort of punk rock Persephone, Apollo, and Aphrodite all gather her together, and they're like, yeah, well, we're pretty sure you murdered her, and now we gotta kill you.
Huh?
And they basically, in the first scene, you basically convince them to give you a week to solve the murder. So you're trying to figure out who killed Calliope so that the Greek gods don't murder you for it.
And who are you? You're the muse?
You're the muse now.
Okay.
And so your ability, the ability is to cause people to sing and to be able to sort of draw them out that way.
Oh, that's interesting. The classic thing where in musicals you're kind of like, you sing what's in your heart.
Yep, that is the reason behind the music, why it's a musical. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty good premise. It's not as good as like Strange New Worlds, which is a fantastic premise for musicals.
Sounds like a TV show you guys liked.
TV show.
The one about
Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
Kind of, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, if I were this muse, I would always be asking people, do I amuse you? Like Joe Pesci.
Uh-huh. So, this is...
you're not a Zack Snyder fan?
this is... feels very fables, very Wicked and Divine. I'm about halfway through it. It's a pretty quick play.
Like, what do you do in the game?
So it's mostly dialogue trees.
Okay.
Like, you choose one style. There's like, clever and, like, scrappy, and then, like, kick-ass are your different...
Oh, interesting.
And then you get dialogue options, and if you picked one personality, you get those options. Very much like Mass Effect and some of those. Mm-hmm. And then when the songs start, you have, like... In between the songs, it'll give you a little choice of, like... for example, at Persephone's club, The Underworld, you're like, play to the crowd, or try to confront her.
Okay.
And so the songs will sort of go in direction based on the choices you make.
So is this more like a Telltale game with singing?
A little bit, yeah.
It's not like some Final Fantasy game with singing where you like boost your stats and
Telltale
you get magical.
Telltale is probably the right vibe.
Okay. Yeah, no, that sounds kind of fun. What do you think so far?
I like but don't love it. I think the trick of the musical is that you really need your original... You need original music. We learned this from, like, the Flash Supergirl thing where they basically just did covers.
Yeah.
Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist was not original music.
That was a rare case of it working.
Yeah. Also, they did do, like, they kind of did a spin on it.
They did rearrange.
They did arrangements, yes.
But, like, in general, I want original music.
And you want it to crackle.
I want it to be really good. And these are just kind of okay.
Right. And you need it to crackle.
I need it to crackle. Anyway, I'll finish it out. It's solid. It's a fun game.
Well, one kind of, for me at least, one thing that I like about indie games is they're short.
Yep,
you play in like 10 to 15 hours or so.
Yeah.
One of my favorite games, Journey, can be played in about 8 hours, maybe?
Yeah.
Nick,
you've been playing an older game, Cyberpunk 2077.
Yes. Spurred on by Dave and I messing with the Morkborg Cyborg RPG system.
Yeah,
I was like... Now is the time to embrace my inner cyberpunk.
Yep.
So, I went out and bought that. I have played about 5% of it, I would assume.
Because
the game's, what, maybe 2-3 years old?
Yes.
Something like that?
I've basically gotten to the twist.
Yep.
That happens after your first big mission that you're working for.
It's long enough that I think we can say. Basically, you've got Johnny Silverhand in your head.
Yeah, you're...
A.K.A. Keanu Reeves' character.
The job you're on, you're supposed to steal a kind of a flash drive, like a deck,
mm-hmm.
that supposed to be something very original and new, and you steal it from one of the, like, the head of the corpse,
mm-hmm.
one of the big gangs, and inadvertently you have to shove it in your brain to keep it safe.
Yep.
And that does not go well.
Nope.
You get killed, and it revives you, and you learn that, yes,
you... How do you get revived?
The chip actually it basically rewrites things, and it's rewriting your brain so... Johnny Silverhand will take over
your entire body.
Yes. But how do you die? Like, what is it that actually
kills you? Someone shoots you in the head.
But this thing repairs the damage?
Yep. Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's like a one-off thing. It
little
replicates
nanomachines or something?
Yeah, little nanomachines that remake and are sort of slowly overriding your brain.
But now you got Keanu in there.
Yeah.
It sounds like a dream come true for people.
Keanu. And he will randomly just show up in ghost form wherever, kind of like... cracking wise or
being a dick.
Yep.
But is he a enjoyable dick? I believe
he's fun.
Oh, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun. And you actually get to play him as sort of an interlude, and it's a lot of fun because he's a badass and he's got like one hit kills.
You get to argue with him, it's fun.
Yeah. But overall, I mean, that's a fun aspect, of course. But the game and the core mechanics are a lot of fun. It's a first person shooter.
Randy, you or one of y'all said that it has is basically Grand Theft Auto ish.
It's very Grand Theft Auto ish.
Yeah. I mean, Night City is very much like...
Do you mean to say you can grab any car or whatever or stuff like that?
You can.
But do you have some cool options on your own?
Yes.
Yes.
You get to keep cars in like garages and stuff.
Yeah, you build up like bases and you get new weapons.
Cool future cars.
Future cars.
You want those Tron cycles?
I don't yet.
No.
I've stolen one.
There is a cool motorcycle, though. There are some cool motorcycles.
Yeah. You have to, do side jobs in order to get money, and then there's, of course, several main jobs, but you could go after, cyber... what do they call them? Cybermaniacs?
Yes, cyber psychos.
Cyber psychos. There are, serial killers that are running around. I did one of those missions last night. It was very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all different types of missions of just, randomness. you can use your hacking abilities in various fun ways. You can upgrade your body with modifications. So it feels very... Yes, it's a first-person shooter, but I feel like there's enough there that it elevates it slightly. And I do think the combat is fun.
Yeah, that's kind of core to something like this, is just that the moment-to-moment meat and potatoes of the game needs to be, like, pretty fun.
I ran out of bullets, and I was like, because I've been just, like, just firing, like, one, or headshotting a bunch of people. That's what I'm good at. But I acquired a samurai sword from one job that I did, and I was like, okay, well, we'll see what up close and personal does. Swords do a lot of damage. Very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, these 20 people, I can kill them rather quickly.
Yeah.
So that was very satisfying. And that's sort of where I'm at. It's a fun game.
Out of curiosity,
it's very satisfying.
Does it go into anything like a bullet time when you do that?
There is a upgrade you can do that. You can do that. Okay. I do not have that. I just
want didn't to get shot to pieces running around with a sword?
I did get shot to pieces, but I can heal myself with various like stems.
Okay.
That you basically shoot into yourself, and it'll give you health back.
I'm gonna use my cyber health pack.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is, like, everyone you kill drops fun shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And you pick that up, and there's
classic role-playing game type of thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's a little neat
stuff.
Yeah,
you have to loot everything.
Yeah.
And there's loot the area around you, because you always find, like, cool stuff, too. Mm-hmm. You can also craft to build things, and you, of course, have, like, perk trees and all the stuff to upgrade your you start out with, like, low stats, and you're slowly building up everything, mm-hmm. so you have better ability to shoot and move and hacking. So, and it's cool that you can, like, hack into, like, turrets and cameras, mm-hmm. and you can, or various vending machines and stuff that will cause chaos and, like, get people to not look at you and stuff
like
that.
That's
so
cool.
It's a little bit beyond just a Grand Theft Auto where you're go on a rampage.
You can
and
do
shoot.
Fun cyberpunk stuff, it sounds like.
It is not just a bland, I'm going to shoot this person, then I'm going to just, for the romp of it, run around the city shooting people.
I got a few questions for you.
Yeah, shoot.
How's the story?
I like it a lot.
I know there's a bunch of different stories, but I presume there's sort of a central story.
Yeah, so your main character, you choose from three different options. You either choose you're a nomad, so one of like the Outlander kind of gang types.
Yep.
I can't remember what the middle tree is. Maybe like a low-level enforcer or something, actually, in the city.
It's been a while since I've
And then
it,
the
so
third
I do,
the third one is you are a member of the Corps, or one of the Corps.
Mm-hmm.
I think eventually you get like thrown out because you screw up or something, and you kind of work your way. But the idea is to basically up your street level and everything on various... But each tree will give you kind of advantages in certain, like, different dialogue trees.
How's the writing?
Good.
It's actually really good.
Yeah, I think the story is a lot of fun.
And voice acting?
It's good. I honestly thought the main... Because I'm playing a female V, and I thought it was Zoe Saldana doing it, because it just sounds like her, it is not.
Okay.
But the voice acting is very good.
Okay. I feel like I had some final question. Oh, are any of the many glitches that plagued the game originally still available, or still around? Available?
I've run into a couple, and some are...
how bad?
Nothing, like, overtly, like... I'm very kind of, like, whatever. It's something I could roll with. Like, the first level I had an invisible gun.
Oh, right.
I should not have that. But I just killed somebody and took their gun, and it was fine.
Right.
And
I would have thought a few years into it they had patched all of that stuff. But...
Yeah, the loading screen... I've had one where a loading screen freaked out and wouldn't, like, move past it, so I had to play a little bit.
But I know that even when it had the most glitches when it came out, still a number of my friends, struggled through it. They weren't hitting the super problematic ones, and they had a good time. And it sounds like you are finding, with the, a few glitches, it's not a big issue.
No. Yesterday I played, like, 3 hours of it just for...
Nice.
Just did a couple of those stories.
It's very easy to get sort of lost.
Yeah, it is.
Now you're Cybernick.
I am Cybernick.
And then I was going to give a quick non-spoiler review. I went and saw Blue Beetle.
Yep.
Which I think y'all are planning on seeing at some point.
When it hits HBO Max.
Oh, okay.
Might catch it while it's still at theaters, but I've been kind of skipping the superhero stuff for a little while now.
So the buzz on this has been that it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, and we're going to talk about my other podcast, The TV Dudes. We're going to talk about it as our Patreon thing for the week. So I was like, okay, I'll go see it. I you guys know where I am on DC movies.
Yep.
And
you absolutely love them.
Yes. As much as a Zack Snyder movie.
Yeah.
Which I guess is a bunch of DC movies.
That is.
I didn't watch Aquaman. I know you guys liked it.
Better than a Zack Snyder movie.
I saw Shazam in the theater. I liked it okay. I like this a little bit better than Shazam, but not that much more.
Yeah. Yep.
I think there's a lot of things that work about it. I think that the Blue Beetle suit looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the guy playing Jaime Reyes, the guy from
Cobra Kai,
he's fantastic. He's probably the best part about it. His family that's around him is all interesting. And the choice for the villain is interesting. However, I think their villains are severely underwritten. I don't... Susan Sarandon, her motivation is completely opaque to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like everything from all the story arcs, all the arcs of the characters, I feel like are kind of one note.
Mm.
I feel like this needed a better script pass.
Did they lift anything from the Jim DeMadison?
No, it doesn't feel like theirs. They also moved
Keith
it
Giffen,
from,
right?
It was Keith Giffen and John Rogers.
They moved it from El Paso to Palmera City. They made up a Florida-based fake city,
okay,
which is a weird call.
I think we guessed that maybe, or my guess as to why they did that, I don't know, because mostly DC characters kind of do have invented cities, fictional cities, and I think they thought it might look a little bit too weird to have him, you know... They're like, oh, what, the first Latino hero doesn't get a city?
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing that, I don't know, has El Paso had any notably bad things happen lately? Was there, like, a shooting there?
I don't know.
I feel like they had some rough stuff, and I wondered if they were just like, do we really want to kind of associate our hero with a thing that could be, any given week in the news, have some bad thing go down? It's one advantage to
it. I don't know. It feels a little weird to me. I will say they do make use of Ted Kord and that kind of thing. It's definitely the reference you saw in the trailer.
Tie in something where like the aliens had some connection to him once upon a time?
They tie him and Dan Garrett into the Scarab a little bit.
Okay,
which I think they did in the comics too.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Eventually, anyway, it's fun, but it is also like 2.5 hours long. It's a little long.
I think I looked it up and I thought it was just like 2:10 or something.
It's like
2:50. Okay, yeah.
That might as well be 2:50.
I mean, there's like so many trailers now, it's easy to get, you know, kind of a...
As much fun Randy was having.
I definitely felt like I was in there for a while.
Right, I was just trying to make sure we're accurate in that.
Anyway, I won't say, I mean, it's really fun, and I totally see why people love this. I did not love it, but I liked it better than I expected to.
Randy, in your pantheon of DC movies, can I hear what your top three are?
Well, there's...
You gotta pick them.
Superman 1978.
No, it's all got all the recent stuff. Only recent.
Oh.
Suicide Squad?
No.
You didn't like it?
I didn't.
The James Gunn one?
Nope.
Oh, weird.
Oh. I didn't like that either. I guess Wonder Woman is in there.
Sure.
It's fallen in my estimation, but Wonder Woman would be in there. Yep. And I guess below that would be Blue Beetle, and below that would be Shazam.
Okay. That's what I was looking for.
But if given the choice, I wouldn't watch any of those. So.
Pretty hardcore. Yeah. I would watch most of those. I haven't seen Blue Beetle yet. I would probably at least watch most of those.
Yeah, I would watch Thor 2 before I'd watch any of those.
You do that.
I still believe that Marvel's lowest tier is still better than most of DC's.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
All right, Dave, you're going to talk about My Adventures with Superman, which I talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I'm only what episode is it on now?
8, isn't that? Or
Randy, do you know? It's
because I think I'm 2 or 3 behind, and I was on episode 5.
Maybe it's like 7 episodes in.
Okay,
yeah. So I've seen 4 episodes in, enough to I think I've got like something of a sense of it. And
you got to the big reveal.
I got to the big reveal, okay. Which, you know, obviously I don't want to say what that is. That's right. Y'all talked about that.
And I think it's actually a good hook if somebody is not really...
It is, but it also kind of came out of nowhere in a cool way in that episode.
It's true.
And that episode is that Jimmy and Lois, although, well, just Lois in this one, discover that Clark is Superman.
Yeah.
And it becomes clear that this is not going to be one of those shows where he has to lie to his friends for season after season after season until finally it comes out and they all yell at each other and then they hug.
Which I'm super thankful for.
Yes.
Yeah. As I'm watching it, it reminded me in a lot of ways of Avatar: The Last Airbender. Not just because the three characters remind me a lot of Aang and Sokka and Katara,
yeah.
Though they do. And Jimmy Olsen, I was like, specifically, I was like, is that Sokka's voice? It's not.
It's not.
He kind of has the same vibe.
Yeah.
But, like, the way those characters kind of goof around, and even just the style of sense of humor on Last Airbender, I feel like it informs this a lot. And I don't mean to say that it, like, specifically was lifting from that, because I think that also would fit into some lighter anime and some other shows and stuff, but it really did remind me of that, and all in a good way. It also reminded me of it in the same way that when I started watching Last Airbender, I watched, like, two or three episodes, and I was like, it's good. You know, nothing... I don't know why people are so into it. You know, it's not amazing. And, but, you know, I gave it a little bit more time, and then it became, like, my favorite animated show ever.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I needed to see it deepen. I needed to see some more serious character moments. And also just how they built out their lore and everything. And, you know, I'm not quite there yet on this, but just that fourth episode in, I was like, oh, that was really cool.
Well, the framing device of having those, like, the brain and Monsieur Mala
has not shown yet.
He's not gotten to that yet.
But that's the episode.
No, it's episode 6.
Nope. At the very end of 4, she figures it out, like, in the last 2 minutes of it.
It's the episode after that.
It's the episode with Parasite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yep. This is, from what y'all told me, the interesting thing is that there is sort of one big story. Lots of little isolated standalone stories along the way. So, for instance, in the fourth episode, it had the parasite in it.
Yeah.
And this is, like, one of the kind of exciting things about the show is seeing how they will, like, completely re-envision old characters to the point where the parasite is not a character. Yeah. The parasite is a piece of technology invented by the sort of a tech bro in the...
Elon Musk type.
Meant to be, like, almost like... Maybe like a 20-something Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Who's a... What is it? Oh, Professor Ivo.
Yep.
Who's normally a kind of a slightly more C-list character, but he's an old Justice League villain and stuff like that. Yep. And they kind of elevated him in this. Nick, did you notice... because I mentioned it to Randy yesterday, and I think you had missed it. The Lex Luthor appearance. But otherwise, Lex Luthor has not appeared in this show. Yeah,
but it's definitely him.
Do you know the deal?
No, I don't.
So, Professor Ivo has a put-upon assistant named Alex.
Oh.
With red hair.
I think Dave's right. I think that's
and at the end of the episode, when they're all is said and done, Clark and those guys go back and they're like, all his tech is gone. We got to figure out what happened to it. I think I know what happened to it.
Yeah.
But they're laying the seeds for fun stuff like that along the way. This is going to clearly be a different interpretation of Lex, where he, like them, is almost like Lex Year One.
Yeah.
He was like somebody's assistant at first, and he was being mistreated too. And so, you know, the same way that they're all interns on the show. Y'all kind of did the thing, so I'm not going to stay on this too long. Just to say that the action sequences are really cool, the camaraderie between the characters is really cool. There's a slightly more adult vibe than I thought in this, in the sort of, I'm going to say intimate scene, but where basically Clark gets thrown out of the party and his kind of jacket gets torn.
Yep.
Lois manages to sneak him back in because they're trying to infiltrate it and figure out stuff that's going on. But he has to take off his jacket for a while and be there in his undershirt. And Lois, like, takes off whatever jacket she was wearing. And they're both kind of sitting there talking. And they're both kind of have the little anime blush thing going on.
Yep.
And they kind of get to talking a little bit more seriously about things. And there had been a question of, oh, well, we're going out to report at this party. Is it a date? Would we call this a date? And I was like, it was actually a very sweet sequence. Y'all mentioned this, and it was one of the main things I wanted to see, which was that Lois was into Clark for Clark and not one of those, the old, like, Silver Age thing or even Golden Age thing.
She liked Clark, not Superman.
Where she was like, you know, if only you could be more like the badass Superman Clark. And thank God it's not that.
Yep.
Anyway, I like really like the two of them on the screen together. I like Jimmy a lot too, and so it's you've got a good thing going when your three characters, you know, like any given pairing of them or all three of them together is fun.
Yep.
The
trick with me with recommending this, and I ran into this with you, is that I don't want to spoil the cool stuff. But you kind of need to know the cool stuff to be intrigued enough to watch
it. It's like
you just have to trust me, watch it. And watch like 5 episodes, and if you're not feeling it by then, you're not going to feel it. But it builds really well.
If Randy likes a DC property, you
exactly.
Should take it out.
But that is the tricky thing, because Superman is something we've seen interpreted so often from the many movies, many animated movies, Smallville, different comics. And so there's a lot of different versions, and it would be kind of easy to maybe watch the first episode and think, well, it's kind of like a slightly anime-ish Superman. Not for me. Especially if you're like, well, like none of us are big anime nerds.
No.
We dabble at most.
Yep.
And so, I guess if you watched 4-5 episodes, you're really only watching about the equivalent of one movie.
Yeah.
So I would say, yes, give it that and see if it can win you over, because it looks like it's going to become one of the notable interpretations.
Agreed. Yeah. All right, so now we come to the segment of the show called Nick Presses Play.
It's true.
Nick watched a bunch of movies, and he's going to talk about them. And Dave and I have seen, I think, I've seen one of them.
And hopefully you can throw in some questions to make this not as...
No, it's the one-man Nick show. Give me a soliloquy.
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right, so let's start. Press play on the movie The Deepest Breath, which is actually a documentary. I say this, it's on Netflix right now. It's an A24 picture. It focuses on...
Free diving.
Champion free diver. And I knew nothing about this. I didn't even know this was a sport, although it doesn't surprise me. However, it is a very deadly sport, because you're diving like 90 to 100 meters beneath the ocean, and then swimming
sometimes
100
like
meters
through a cave
up.
And stuff
well,
like that?
Well, sometimes, yes. There's a specific location.
That was one of the challenges.
That's one of the, like, has more deaths than Mount Everest.
Right. It's one of those things where, like, you know, these guys essentially, they're very quick, for people who don't know what free diving is. It's that deep diving that people train and they learn to hold their breath for many minutes.
Yes. You don't have any, like, breathing other
it's
than
just
the air.
You.
Yeah. It's just your body. And
they don't have, like, an emergency tank.
No.
So, let's say you got, like, 100 meters down and then you're like, now time to go through the cave. And then you're like, I'm a little tired. Well, then you die. You just die.
So the one place that has the most deaths, like, than Mount Everest is...
Are
you
there
dive,
skeletons in the
You dive 70 meters down, and then you swim through an archway that is 40 meters, I want to say, and then you have to swim up another 70 meters.
Sure, why not
meters.
Just have underwater Jason be down there,
and
too?
And I know this is, like, one of those adrenaline highs that some people, like, seek, and, like, they feel like they have to be the best at this.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what a lot of this
I
focuses
that
on.
But they have to be pretty physically tough people.
Physically tough people, but, like, it's mainly focuses on a couple of women that do it.
Okay.
I mean, that are after sort of, like, big... monumental, like, I swam the furthest down.
Did you like this, by the way?
I did. I really, really enjoyed it. It is harrowing. A lot of the... They were filming what they were doing most of the time. And some of, like, the shots that they get, like...
Just, like, GoPro stuff?
A little bit of that.
Oh, but
also
actual...
there's all, like, camera crews and stuff, like, who are at, like, the events filming and stuff. So you watch people... And they have spotters in the water of, like the people who are there to help you if something goes wrong.
Right.
And they will, like, sometimes swim down, like, the meters. If somebody disappears and doesn't come up, they dive down and go look for you. Sometimes they don't find you. Right. But some of the shots of, like, them coming up, and they'll get within maybe, like, 20 feet of the surface... And then their brain shuts off.
Oh, Jesus.
And you see it. You watch it. You see kind of their eyes just kind of glaze over.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Like, holy shit. This is insane. Why do people do this?
Yeah.
But I'm also like, why do you skydive? Why do you do all this other stuff?
Right.
And
I watched a documentary once on, I guess, is it free climbing?
Yeah.
Where you know, it's like literally you're scaling these sheer cliff faces with just the fingertips and your stuff like that. And it is stunning, and I could barely watch it. My stomach was, like, turning the whole time, but it was incredible.
Yeah, and this one is one of those, it's directed by Laura McGann. I don't know her, but the way they filmed this was really, really interesting. It's all, like, real life. It's, like, told from the perspective of, like, one of the fathers of the person who disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And their body was never found. Because it just... floated off into wherever.
Yep.
It's very sad, but it was very compelling, and I was...
What's the name of that one?
It's called The Deepest Breath.
Deepest Breath, okay.
The tagline, because all movies have taglines, one dive, one breath, one chance.
That actually sounds interesting to me. I think I might try and get around to that.
Yeah, it's
one.
On Netflix. It's really, really good. Next one I'm going to talk about is a silly one. And I say silly in quotation marks because it's The Pope's Exorcist.
This was a movie that, like, I feel like the very first trailer I saw, when it was just like a teaser trailer, I was like, oh, that looks kind of spooky. Oh, Russell Crowe's in it. That kind of looks cool. Or I like Russell Crowe, all right.
So,
and then, like, as the more and more trailers came out, I was like, oh, this looks hokey.
Yes.
I think I saw him, like, talking in what seemed like a kind of ridiculous Italian accent.
Yep.
And I know the scares looked a little telegraphy and stuff, but so Nick, tell me, what is the truth?
Okay, about so I'm gonna drop Exorcist. Some truth bombs. So this is an Exorcist film. That's all this. It's very much kind of by the books in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I did not realize before watching this, like the Conjuring movies, this is supposedly based on fact.
Mm-hmm.
This is about Father Gabriel Amroth, the chief exorcist of the Vatican. Real person.
Right.
Real title.
Right. Crazy stuff, but sure, it's real.
I mean, a real title, real thing.
Right,
You know, whatever.
And Nick, what's his era? Do you know what his era was?
Oh, God. 1950s, this does,
1980s?
No, it was like 80s. Because okay. It was like, this takes place in the late 80s, early 90s,
I want to say. Oh, it actually is set
in
there. Why does the Pope's Exorcist have a mullet? Well, that's why.
But it is focusing on, you know, Russell Crowe plays the character. He, it's about a haunted church in Spain.
Okay.
And he gets called out because the Pope sends him there for unknown reasons, and shit hits the fan. It is very kind of by the numbers Exorcist films.
But, you're about to say but.
But Russell Crowe, even in his, like, silliness,
yeah,
he's a good actor.
Yeah.
He can turn it up. And he, when writing...
this Exorcist movie gets turned up.
He rides a stupid Vespa. I laughed out loud every time he was on a Vespa going through the streets of Rome. Or he drives from Rome to Spain, now, and I had to laugh.
Let me ask you this, Nick. Is it supposed to be funny?
No, I think that was more me finding it amusing.
Uh-huh.
I will say the effects in this film, very good.
Yeah, you were saying that it was kind of
there is
some
a
creepy weirdness.
Scene where he calls out the demon that is in this little boy, and there is a trick with the eyes that I was like, damn, that was cool.
Okay.
And I have not done that in a little while.
Nick, is this destined to be a Master Pancake Theater?
I think you could easily do it.
Okay.
And you can come up with some fun, like, drinking games. And, but however, it's not bad.
Okay.
It's not like...
Give me a movie that... One movie that it's better than and one movie that it's worse than.
Oh, God.
What's it better than? Like a horror movie. You just saw, like, one of the Insidious movies. How was it better or worse than Insidious 5 or whatever?
I might have had more fun with it than Insidious 5.
Okay.
Which is a little sad, but...
Lesser Insidious outing, but...
Yeah. And... It's worse than...
The Thing.
Well, yeah, of course.
But yeah, I'm trying to think of something that's like...
I'm trying to think of like a
middling but still fun to watch
What was
movie.
That?
Did you like As Above, So Below?
I did.
Okay.
That's
gotta be better, right?
It's better than that.
As Above, So Below
is better than this.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll agree with you. I was trying to think of another Exorcist movie, and I would say that one that had the dad from Supernatural about the Dybbuk box.
Possession.
That was better than Pope's Exorcist.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good, solid movie.
But they do a good job of kind of, like, giving a backstory for the family that the boy who gets possessed...
Okay. Nick, you have intrigued me enough that I might try it out.
I think you would have a fun time. It's not
bad. Not everything has to be great, and I might enjoy it. Tell me, where is it streaming?
Netflix.
Okay.
It is their
Netflix also the home for the diving thing? Okay.
Netflix, this is their number one movie right now.
Yeah, I saw that and that cracked me up. I sometimes almost just have to root for the little guy movies, even if they might be El Succo. I'm just like, good for them. Okay, what else?
Okay, this was a movie called To Catch a Killer. It's on Hulu right now.
Okay.
I knew nothing about it. Kaylee was like, we should watch it, because it has, is it Shailene Woodley? And Ben Mendelsohn. They are,
okay.
And this is about a serial killer that attacks on New Year's Eve with a sniper rifle, kills like 30 people.
Sounds pretty funny.
It is not funny.
Okay.
Did you guys ever see the movie Wind River, the Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen?
Like, closest thing I can think of to this plot is in Gotham Central when the Joker was doing his sniper rifle thing.
I mean, it kind of feels like that. And Ben Mendelsohn plays an FBI agent who is a little on the outs. But he is leading this up. There's political things. There is a joke in it that says that the mayor is not unlike the mayor from Jaws, which is very true.
Yep.
But Shailene Woodley plays kind of a...
Where is this taking place?
New York, I believe.
It seemed like we're not going to shut down the city because of a sniper. We have to run Broadway.
Yes, essentially. Maybe not run Broadway, but we have to actually be able to have tourism and all this other bullshit that you would expect.
And you have to secretly hire one of the cats from the musical Cats to bring down the sniper.
There is nothing happy in this
Jellicoe movie. Takedown.
There is nothing happy in this movie. However,
it's a thriller, though.
It's a thriller.
Because normally thrillers are like, they can be dark, but they usually have this kind of energy propelling them.
There's an energy here, but it's not happy energy.
Okay.
The two main characters are very broken in a lot of ways. Shailene Woodley, who's essentially the lead, is a. She's been passed over for promotions. She's kind of psychologically damaged enough that she didn't pass her psych eval to join the FBI, but she could join the New York Police Department, which says something. She's really good in it. She's always, like, a good actress in everything she's in. And then Ben Mendelsohn plays Ben Mendelsohn in a lot of ways.
Like
He's a little nihilistic in this, and... A little charismatic.
I can't think of any other thrillers that are particularly dark.
But
I don't know, those 90s weird sex thrillers like Final Analysis or something like that?
It's maybe not as dark as Final Analysis.
Okay.
But it kept me on the edge of my seat, and I wasn't expecting it to.
Okay.
I was impressed with it enough that I was like, the mystery here, I couldn't figure out exactly what... And I was very intrigued by kind of the...
Does it turn out somebody sniped themselves?
No. No, like I
That's
said, there's...
quite the twist.
There's no, like... There's a twist here, but it felt more entrenched in realism than I was expecting it to.
What was the name of this one again?
It's called To Catch a Killer.
Okay. I gotta hit the restroom again. Yeah.
And the final one of my Just Press Play is a... No Hard Feelings, which I think Randy has seen.
I saw it. It's on the theater.
So this one, I remember seeing previews once, but I completely just pushed it out of my brain.
I saw this trailer like 100 times.
You guys have actually seen more movies in theaters than I have.
That's because we're going to theaters still.
It's true. I like watching things from the comfort of my own home.
Yeah, I saw...
This goes into his isopod.
I saw a friend posting about how someone posted a Blue Beetle, and he's like, oh, yeah, I guess I never saw that trailer. I'm like, how? I saw that trailer 100 times, and it's because he's not going to theater.
Yeah.
But if you're going to theater, you see the same trailers over and over again.
Yeah, I guess this is a reminder that if you are primarily a home viewer, you will get a very different experience as to what is coming up than people who are still go to theaters.
You are spared.
In some cases.
The thing is, I still watch these trailers, but I only watch them once. So
I recommend that.
Because, so they don't sink in.
Because when I saw this, I thought that all the funny stuff was in the trailer.
And that's too bad, because this movie, it feels kind of a piece of what you would get in a kind of a 1999, There's Something About Mary kind of.
Yeah, for sure that's what they're doing.
Vibe.
This is the Jennifer Lawrence kind of tawdry comedy, where I know that she's a chick who needs some money fast, and what, some parents hire her to take their kind of introverty son who's about to go to college and teach him to date or something?
Date and have sex.
Yep.
And, I mean, it is kind of...
Did I hit all the high points here? Is that
no, that is 100% accurate.
She's just, like, low on money for kind of normal
people. Well, they live
reasons.
In Montauk, and
this
a lot of
beach
the...
Beach
town is becoming very up-and-coming. A lot of people are moving in. Mm-hmm. She's been there all of her life, and she's sort of... owing back taxes and getting pushed out by the rich people, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's like, well, they're using us because she's like a bartender and a couple of other... and an Uber driver. And they're like, well, they use us for everything. Might as well use them for something.
Sure.
And that's sort of where it starts. I will say, I thought this had a pretty good through line as because
a little heart to
a
it.
A little heart.
I know how these things work.
A little heart.
First, they make you laugh with a fart joke, and then they're like, "My father didn't love me." That's my summation of all the raunchy comedies.
And there are fun things. They're meat cute in quotation marks because, I mean, it's basically he's a mark for her in a lot of ways.
Does he know that she's been hired?
No.
All right.
He does learn about that eventually, but no. He basically...
Clarence in Alabama in... what's the movie? Tarantino, True Romance.
True Romance. Yes,
she was a prostitute hired secretly
by
the guy who ran the comic shop he worked at, Randy. Something to think about.
Something that happens a lot in movies.
Something to think about.
Uh-huh.
Well, I will also say, this is not the a typical movie that Jennifer Lawrence stars in. She usually is, like,
honestly, Katniss I saw this and I was things. Like, is this what she's been reduced to when I saw the trailer?
Well, from what I understand is she read the script and she loved it. And I think... And that's what she said in an interview.
I get that you're, you know, like, and not that she only does, like, these A-list movies. She does shitty movies sometimes, too. but yeah, she you know, she had established herself as a person who could be in, like, kind of serious dramatic things, who could be in, like, thrillers and genre movies like X-Men and stuff, too, or Hunger Games. But she was pretty A-list, and then I was like, oh, she's doing this? But, like, I do think that, I've seen interviews with her. She's a goofball.
She is.
Like, and so I don't really, like, you know, think that she wants to do, like, a sex comedy. That's cool.
Yeah, honestly, some of the movies we watched over there are very sex positive. There's another movie that Randy will watch named Joyride we will talk about later.
Yep.
Highly recommend that one as well. Okay. But this one, there were great scenes. I thought the heart was there. I love Natalie Morales, so when she shows up as her best friend...
I honestly, Natalie Morales being in this elevated the whole thing for me.
Yeah.
I know her boyfriend is also a guy who I really like. He was in The Mick.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And so I forgot about that.
The two of them are actually my favorite characters, and they're only sporadically in it.
They were,
from the trailer, I got the vibe that she seemed like she was supposed to be kind of, I don't know, self-involved or something like that, but maybe, you know, kind of grows a little throughout
it. A little bit.
Well, yeah, I don't know what her arc is.
She's self-involved, but she's mainly been, like, burned by men and not really kind of... Doesn't enjoy the... It opens up with her car being repoed by a cousin from The Bear and from Andor, the guy who basically from the group that screws them over that Andor has to shoot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I forget his name, but he's a great actor.
Oh, man, it's Eben something.
Eben Mossbacher.
Yeah, there you go.
And he's, like, her ex and repoing her car and everything. So she's been burned by men. And upon dating this teenager on verge of adulthood, she finds that not all men are bastards.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he kind of, like... after some horrible things on a macing, which I thought was really funny, he maces her in the face, which I
saw that in the trailer.
Yeah, it's in the trailer. Apparently, all the funny things are.
a lot of them are.
But he wants to date her and sort of like woo her in some like very traditional kind of gentlemanly.
She hasn't experienced somebody even attempting that.
Correct. So there's kind of a learning for both of them, and that's the heart.
Yeah,
there's nothing like. There's no rocket science here. This is just kind of a...
But as a meat and potatoes kind of, like, R-rated comedy, you found it satisfying.
Yes. And seeing Jennifer Lawrence put the beat down on a couple of people on the beach was fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
For those who are into this kind of thing, I understand she's nude during that scene.
Yes. There is that.
There's a naked fight with the... Yeah, it is kind of funny. She's basically... fighting some kids that stole their clothes.
Yeah.
So she comes up naked and wrecks them.
Right.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
Do they, like, think, like, they're not going to come running after
us? Yeah, that's
naked.
That kind of a thing. And then she's well, like,
that's
goes,
pretty funny.
She goes totally feral goblin mode.
Well, and before that, she skinny dips out into the ocean and convinces the kid to go out, and the kid's like, isn't this how Jaws started? So the writing, I felt, was pretty solid above, across the board, so... I don't know.
Of the four movies you just mentioned, what's the best one?
God.
You seem like you liked
Deep Sea Diver, Pope's Exorcist, Jennifer Lawrence's boobs,
or Catch a Killer, the sniper guy,
or Sad Sniper.
It sounded like Deepest Breath was the one you really liked.
I think Deepest Breath was probably the best, like quality wise. I think laughter wise, the Jennifer Lawrence,
not the sniper one,
not the sniper.
Yeah. Well, duly noted.
All right. That'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe. Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.